Another episode of Space A. I'm your host, Mahima Kapoor, and I'm quite excited about today's episode because we're chatting with Amanda Green, or better known as Madame Green to her students. She is a STEM educator in Alberta who tries to incorporate various space topics into her curriculum, such as space garden projects, space coding, and Canadians in space in general. But probably the coolest fact about her is that she got to name an exoplanet and a star. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome onto the podcast, Amanda Green.
Hi, Mahima. Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Awesome. We're glad to have you here. So I have a couple interesting questions for you, Amanda, today. So my first question is, how did you first get interested in space?
I always talk about this when I give any of my keynotes or lectures or public speaking addresses. I always talk about my spark. And my spark for science was, you know, in nature with my father, fishing and hunting and discovering, you know, how animals lived and all of those things. And biology was kind of always my passion for the longest time. But I don't know, 5-6 years ago when Chris Hadfield was in space and I just discovered Twitter, and every morning I'd wake up to hear him or see him tweet, "Good morning, Earth." I'm like, "Good morning, Chris." Like, he was just talking to me. And it just got me really excited and really proud of Canada's role in the space industry. And I haven't been able to get enough ever since. So it's just something that I've always tried to weave into my teaching because I feel like it's super exciting and it's really interesting and fascinating. And there's a lot for us as Canadians to take in.
Yeah, and the one super fun fact that I mentioned in my intro was that you got to name a star and an exoplanet. So tell us about how you came up with the two names and what they are, and what was the process like of naming them?
Again, Twitter brought this to me. So I just saw a contest that the International Astronomical Union was having, and I think it was 150, 155 countries were asked to name a star and an exoplanet. And so, and this isn't just like the where you can go to the science center and get a star named after your grandma or something like that. Like, this is the official International Astronomical Union's name, which is pretty cool. So Canada had a contest, and I read through all the parameters, and it looked like they kind of wanted something that would really represent Canada past to present. And so I thought, well, what better way than to use one of our First Nations dialects or languages. So I chose Cree. I'm from Alberta, so it's one of the bands out here, one of the groups. So and then I thought to myself, well, what's important to me, you know? And I'm thinking about a star and about a planet that's orbiting around it. And so for me, my family is everything. My kids are the center of my universe. So I picked the word Nigawe, which means mother for the star, and Awasis, which means child for the planet. Now, because I have zero family or connection or proper knowledge of First Nations language and Cree language, I actually asked them, you know, is there someone that could help me make sure that I've picked the right words? And one of the people that were part of the committee picking the finalists was a gentleman from Manitoba named Wilfred Buck. And he's kind of like a First Nations space astronomy guru. Like, he's incredible and so wise. And so he made sure that I had the right name. I think I had something else for Awasis, and he picked the right one. And so, yeah, it was really great. And we were interviewed together on it. And if you look online, they have a couple interviews. And it was really interesting because after I actually got to meet him, he was here for a conference just before the COVID pandemic broke out. And he got to explain to me, you know, some of the names, and that also we found out that if they find other exoplanets around Nigawe, that they'll name them other Cree family names like grandmother or auntie or brother or sister, that kind of thing. So it's a really, really neat opportunity.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. And I loved the backstory as well. I didn't actually know about that. So that's super exciting to hear about. Another thing that you're interested in is space coding. So how can kids get more involved in this, and what exactly is it?
Like many things in my life, I give most things a space twist or a space theme. I'm kind of a yes person. Someone's like, "Hey, do you want to try this?" I'm like, "Yep, sure do," because I want to keep learning and growing, much like our curriculum and much like our students are constantly learning things. And so I learned a little bit of robotics using Lego Mindstorms back in the day. Someone had asked me to run a class. I teach primarily junior high science, some math, and also option courses. And it used to be like French or Spanish, but now it's sort of evolved into being these awesome coding projects. And so from there, I took to it because the kids love it. They're super engaged, and it's a lot of discovery. So people are like, "Well, how are you learning this? Like, coding's, it's hard. I'm like, oh yeah, it's super hard, but I don't have to learn it. I have to facilitate it and I have to get the kid learning it. And I tell my students, I'm like, here is a platform. We'll start with something like code.org or Scratch. It's a type of coding where you just go online and you use little blocks to control things. All the way up to now we use microbits or these little automated computers. And we do a bunch of projects with those. And so I tell the kids on day one, I'm like, these are the tools, but you're learning how to use them. I'm just going to help you and help problem solve. So the coding has started from like a huge variety of things. So we've had, we've done some themes on the Canada arm, because everyone's not aware, but Canada, we are some of the biggest world leaders in Canadian robotics. And the Canada arm one, which was on the space shuttle, Canada arm two is on the International Space Station. And they just announced officially that Canada arm three is going to be on the Lunar Gateway. And so to build this kind of robotics requires so much engineering and coding and these skills that we need to have our kids know now, so that when it comes time that they're going to be able to join and be a part of this kind of initiative. So like anything, space is just the way that we can get kids excited about a specific tool or skill that we want them to learn. So there's a lot of things about that. And then we also do some of this coding for, we call it our space garden. So we use microbits to code automated systems to take care of our gardens in our classrooms. So we had like automatic watering systems, temperature sensors, carbon sensors. Eventually next year, we're hoping to make them more energy efficient through automation. And then we just sort of extrapolate saying that if you can do this in our classroom, imagine we could take care of an entire colony on the moon or on Mars. So it just sort of brings it all together.
That's super cool. And now thinking back to my elementary school days, I wish we had that in our classroom. That would have been so exciting. Yeah, so that's awesome. I love that you're doing that out in your classroom and then extrapolating that to for the students to think about in space as well. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
So coming to solving space problems and getting kids prepped for it, what is one space problem that you would love to solve or that you would love to see solved within your lifetime?
I kind of put this question out there just before we recorded the podcast because I wanted to see what other people were thinking. Because there's so many things. And in my classroom, we try to do a lot of project-based learning and problem solving so that when I'm teaching them about energy and the environment, when I'm teaching them about coding, when I'm teaching them about space exploration, that we're actually actively trying to solve some of these problems right in our own classrooms. And sometimes we don't give young kids enough credit, but they're incredible and able to come up with so many cool ideas. There's a thing online called Little Inventors, and it's just a challenge where kids will draw a goofy solution to a real-world problem, but the best ones actually get picked and made, and they make prototypes. And it's a really great way to teach the engineering design process to kids. So I put this out there, and I was thinking, like, there's so many big problems. And somebody replied and said, well, what about climate change? And I was thinking, well, what's that got to do with space? But when we're teaching about making these automated space gardens in our classroom, or we're talking about, the really finite and limited resources on the moon or on Mars, and all those huge problems that we have to solve, ultimately, the technologies that are being made are going to help life here on Earth and facilitate innovations and changes that are going to help us here. We think it's irresponsible to leave Earth and go and colonize the moon or Mars without taking care of our planet first. So what I would like to see solved is I would like to see some sustainable energy sources, like further developing solar and wind, so that if we were to be off planet, that how could we, you know, have enough energy to supply life support systems and gardens and everything that we would need in space. Not just the sources, but also the efficiency and how we're using things and how we're getting them automated. So next year, I work with another teacher. Her name's Julie Arsenault. And we got a grant from Inside Education. It's called A+ for Energy. And it's supposed to be an energy-themed grant, but we made ours more of a space theme with energy. And it's this whole idea of how are we going to measure the energy that we have, make it the most efficient possible, find these better sources, and then, you know, automate everything together on Earth and in space. So long story short, I think climate change is something we need to look at for both life here on Earth and once we get off planet.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And it's always fascinating to also think about how codependent innovation is in space and on Earth, because so many space innovations have been, or innovations rather, that was you know, first built for space, and then they've become useful here on Earth. And now we're trying to do the reverse as well, you know, with all these classroom projects that you have going on, hopefully they'll be able to be used in space. So that codependency is really interesting.
Absolutely. And I think both go hand in hand. And then it just makes things so much more exciting that we'll be able to innovate for Earth and off planet. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So this podcast really is about Canadians in space and learning more about, you know, that sort of underrepresented narratives of Canadians in space. So coming to you, you work in education. So I wanted to ask you, what is the greatest challenge or barrier that you see in Canadian space education specifically?
There's so many different things. Like, part of me wants to say, you know, I'm from Alberta, and so we don't have like the same like space camps. Like the Canadian Space Agency is offering a junior astronaut space camp, but there's also ones through different, the Canadian Aviation and Space Museum and different science centers. Western University is a really good space-based education for kids and for university students. So it feels like a lot of that tends to be on the other side of the country and sort of focused in that area. But I feel like we can still find our ways around that. I think really like the biggest challenge or barrier is, I guess, risk-taking. It's convincing teachers, you know, I've been teaching for 17 years, I'm halfway through my career, and there's other teachers that are like, well, I can't do that, I can't code, or I'm not going to teach about space when I'm teaching grade 7 science, that's not in the curriculum. Or people that are intimidated about project-based learning, well, how are we going to have time to take on these projects and learn about things when I have to teach the curriculum? A lot of teachers don't realize that mm-hmm. they're just teaching the textbook, which is like an inflated curriculum. So I think if we can get adults and teachers able to take risks, to try new things, and to actually like walk the talk, the things that we are trying to get our kids to do, if more adults can do that too, and then it just shows that there's actually a really beautiful niche across this country for these space innovations, a lot of industry for it and a market for it, but we need to get kids ready for these skills, so we need the adults to be able to get themselves ready too.
Yeah, for sure. So to conclude the podcast, my final question for you is, what tips can you provide parents who have kids that are interested in space? And what activities can they do together at home, especially during quarantine? What are some things that maybe you've done in the classroom that would be useful for parents right now?
Oh, we've had to switch our entire way we teach, having to go from in-classroom learning to remote learning. So I've had to actually put quite a bit of thought and practice into this, but I think as a parent, regardless of what our kids' dreams are, when they're excited about something, to feed into that, if they say, I want to be an astronaut when I grow up, well, no, you can't, because, you know, all of our astronauts are, like, back in the day, Chris Hadfield, there was no Canadian Space Agency when he was a kid and wanted mm-hmm. to be an astronaut, and now look at him, right? So I think being able to encourage our kids to follow their dreams, but to realize that it's not just, I want to be an astronaut, I'm going to buy myself a flight suit. It's that you need to start now. All the astronauts I've ever talked to have said, my training started the day I decided when I was a kid I was going to be an astronaut. I knew that I had to be physically fit. I knew that I need to know multiple languages. I knew that I needed to study either, you know, being a pilot or being in medicine or being an engineer. And so as parents, if we're able to encourage our kids not only to dream big, but also to work really hard for it. And so some of the things that we can do now, one of the ones I guess that I would recommend is coding, getting your kids interested. If you go to a website called Canada Learning Code, they would have different sessions all over the country that kids could try out. Now they've had to move to more of an online version. Code.org is a really good one to get started, and Scratch is kind of the third one. Another really good organization, Canadian organization, is called Let's Talk Science. I'm actually a teacher leader for them. And they have so many great online activities you can do. One of them is called Living Space. And it kind of was one of the big sparks or big inspirations for what we're doing in our classroom with coding. I guess you call them environmental monitoring sensors, and comparing the data to the International Space Station. So if you go to their website, they have a lot of teacher resources, but also I think parents, if we're doing remote learning or things over the summer, they have a lot of online resources there too. And then they do this other project called Tomato Sphere. And Tomato Sphere is really great. You get a package of seeds, two packages, one that's been flown up to the International Space Station and one that hasn't. And I use them, teachers, we use them. I use mine in September, and we plant them and like the first week of school. And we use that to teach the scientific method. and then to have these plants all year long, and then to see which ones germinate quicker or not. So yeah, there's so many different things out there. So just go and research and find the thing that fits. So space isn't just, I'm going to be an astronaut. It could be, I'm going to build the Canada Arm 3. I'm going to build the first garden on Mars. There's just so much out there. So yeah, give them that support and let them dream big.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for those cool resources. I hope that people will check them out. And also thanks so much for your time to be here and chat with us. It's always fun to talk to teachers and see, and chat with thought leaders really who are, you know, shaping the ideas and what kids are learning these days. It's always interesting to chat. So thanks so much for being here. Any final thoughts before we conclude the episode?
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, like the biggest thing that I want to say is that Canada is a pretty exciting place to be in love with space. So just keep following those dreams and working hard towards them. And I know for me, I love following the fact that we have 4 active Canadian astronauts right now is pretty exciting. So making sure to keep following them. And that's definitely, it's a great time to be a Canadian in love with space.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, we definitely support that message at the Canadian Space Society. So yeah, really, really glad to talk to you again. Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stay tuned for more exciting episodes from the Canadian Space Society. Bye.